My name is Frank Gonzalez. I'm the Continuing Ed Culinary Arts Coordinator for Kapi'olani Community College for the Culinary Arts Department.
Grant Sato, Chef Instructor, Kapi'olani Community College.
So I actually have, like I said, I've spoken to, I swear, every student in every class that I've ever run, and that's over 1,000 classes by now. And what they want is what everybody wants, which is I want it tasty, I want it cheap, I want it fast, right? And the what I tell my chef instructors when we think of the menus and we work on those together is to think of, you know, somebody driving home Wednesday night, it's 5 o'clock, and they're like, okay, what do I make tonight? Because most people aren't culinary trained, most people aren't, you know, obsessed with food. It's just, you know, they want to put a decent dinner. And most people do want healthy, but they want it tasty and they want it fast. And they want to go one stop at one grocery store, right? And we got that, you know, and that's exactly what we do. And so all of my chefs, you know, whether it's Mexican, whether it's local, whether it's barbecue, whether it's baking, whatever we do, it's always with them in mind. And we've had a huge response for that. I mean, the students who come, which is the general population, and I have a really great demographics. We have folks from 18 to 70s. I've got husbands and wives. I've got college students. I've got a nice equal mix of men and women.
And these people have regular jobs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my classes are on Saturdays, so it's perfect for them to come in. As we go along, we teach them the basic skill sets, you know, the knife skills, using the equipment, sautéing, roasting, braising, how to use the stoves and ovens, safety, which is important, you know, how to keep your food safe and wholesome. And also substitutions. If you don't like this, what can I substitute? If I want to make healthier, what can I take out? You know, we do all of that. Now, you know, a lot, basically over the last couple of generations, I think, a lot of those basic cooking skills and knowledge have just dropped. You know, and that's what I tell all my students. It's like, I can't tell you what you want to eat. I can't tell you what to eat. But I can show you how to make it. And then you choose to make what you like and make as much as you like.
Do you
and
buy
try to keep it reasonable.
People say they don't have time?
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, that is a definite issue. But that said, you know, again, I think if you learn the basic skills, your ability to create something quickly that's really delicious and filling and wholesome and healthy goes way up. Goes way, way, way up. My former roommate Philippe, phenomenal cook. It was the best thing because it was a social thing. You know, we'd get home from work, we'd have a nice cocktail, we'd relax, we'd start cooking together, put some music on, and we're, you know, preparing the food, and we make a full meal. I mean, multiple courses, because that's how Europeans eat, apparently, with, you know, an entree with sides, starch, and vegetable, and salad.
And what time would you eat about?
Usually about, well, we'd start to eat probably about 6:30 or 7.
Nah.
We'd finish.
No.
You
had to be home by 4.
No.
4:30.
No. Not with two of us. We could make tons of food in no time at all.
So you could get home at 5, maybe? 5:30?
Oh, I used to go home like 5. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Easy. 5:30, no problem. We both work fairly close to home. Uh-huh. But, I mean, between the two of us, yeah, we'd knock out a ton of food. And we'd have, you know, an entree, a vegetable on the side. We did a salad. We had cheeses. We had fresh bread, literally, you know, artisan loaves that we pick up on the way home. One of us would stop by. We were both into wine, so we had cases and cases and cases of wine stacked in the corner. We'd probably put down 2 bottles of wine a night between the two of us. We'd start eating probably about 6:30 or 7, and we'd finish dinner about 10. You know, and that's honestly, that's what I try to tell people. That's how people used to eat. Dinner was a time to get together after you finished work, socialize, talk about your day, and put on some music. If you want to do that, it's like it should be the time to kind of get together, relax, and share. And I also tell them if you eat that way, where you have multiple courses, you have cheese, you have bread, you have salad, you have, you know, a piece of chicken, whatever, and then dessert coming, you're not going to eat too much of any one thing. Mm. You know, and you get a real nice, it's like, wow, yeah, we're going to have a salad next. That's great. Oh, the cheese is coming. Oh, that bread is great. So you don't stuff yourself.
I don't think you can really define local food today. I mean, local food is basically what the people who live in this area do. So local food is changing. You know, it it started off with immigrants who came to Hawaii, and that's what most people were used to eating in their homelands, and they recreated those dishes here. Okay, well, we have Chinese immigrants, we have Filipino immigrants, we have Okinawan immigrants, Korean immigrants. So they brought their traditional foods to Hawaii. They weren't able to make them exactly as it did in their home country, but they adapted utilizing the products that were available here.
So like beef, tomato, pork, heka.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, those are naming some of the dishes, but that's originally where it started. That's what you would consider local food. And, of course, we have indigenous culture, which are the Hawaiians, the native Hawaiians, and they, of course, have their own cuisine as well. Now, in modern times, local food is basically just food that the people who live here create. So local food now could be a traditional European French dish, but using locally grown products in a traditional French style of cuisine. It could be Japanese cuisine that utilizes locally grown products. It could be someone who's familiar with Japanese cuisine and trying to do a localized Japanese cuisine. The word local is meaning a locale or a region. And so just because you call something local food doesn't mean it originated here, but it's the food that's being currently cooked here.
So it doesn't mean any particular dishes.
No,
it doesn't at all.
No.
Or that style of, it's not even a style of cooking.
So rather than using the word local, people in the know need to get that out of their vocabulary and just say either the region or the products. So the cuisine that we're doing today is going to be Hawaiian-grown products. Or the cuisine that we're doing is a Hawaiian version of a Japanese classic, or a Hawaiian version of a Puerto Rican classic.
Because we're using local ingredients, you mean?
Correct. You need to get this local out of your head and understand the onion that's grown in Maui on the same seed grown in Oahu, it'll taste differently. Even though it's the same genetic seed that's planted in three different locations, it has a different flavor depending on the altitude, soil content. So wherever it's grown, it tastes different. So the food will taste different. So you have to get this local out of your head and get what your preconceived notions of it is and realize that it's the same dish tastes different in every region that it's cooked. So the local version of it is what that particular locale does with the product. It won't taste the same in another area.
But I mean, I come with my own set of
you come with your own prejudice is what you come with.
Yeah. Of what I like to eat.
Correct. And most people won't break that prejudice. If they don't like something, they won't try it. But what we have to do is to get them to try it. Because even though they may have had it, a tomato grown in California, that same tomato doesn't taste the same when it's grown in Haula or Kahuku or in Kula Maui. It may be a world's difference.
How are you going to get me to try foods that aren't what I think I like?
Well, the thing about it is it's not me to get you to try something in your comfort zone. You have to open your mind yourself and say, if you want to explore what's out there, you will go to restaurants, you'll go to farmers markets with an open mind. And even though you may not care for it, you have to at least try it once. It may either change your mind or it may solidify your dislike for it. But you have to try, because if you don't try, you'll never know.
Okay, then what do people want to eat these days and learn to make?
Well, I think people need to learn how to cook again. They do, because most households do not cook things from scratch. They'll buy or make things that are packaged, frozen, bottled, or jarred, which has lots of sodium, lots of fat, lots of sugar. And unless they learn how to make it from scratch themselves, they're never going to have a healthy cuisine, because they're going to rely on prefabricated items. For example, no one makes tomato sauce from fresh tomatoes and onions and garlic and basil anymore. They'll buy a ragu bottle, and they think that that's the norm. But unless they take a cooking course and know how to make a tomato, classical tomato sauce from scratch, and then repeat that in their own kitchens, that's when they'll realize, hey, you can control the amount of salt that goes into that recipe. You can control the amount of sugars that go into that recipe. And then that's when you can create healthier, tastier food. Because when you're buying a bottled spaghetti sauce, which almost 90% of the population does, and pour on their cooked pasta, you're basically opening yourself up to whatever preservatives, whatever sodium, and whatever sugars or fat is in that bottle. If you make it yourself, you can control that, and which is why I think we have more health-related issues, hypertension, diabetes, because most people are just eating prefabricated food that has high amount of sugars and sodium, not only as a preservative, but also to make a product shelf-stable for a longer period of time.
Oh, my God, Grant, you're slowly starting to get a chink into my brain here. Is there anything besides my brain that's going to convince me that I want to eat that homemade thing?
Well, you got to taste it.
So the flavor, you think, is going to convince me?
Well, no, not unless, as well. The only way you're going to change your mind about a product is by tasting it, and you have to evaluate it, whether you like it or not. And if you don't like it, you're not going to eat it. But if you like it, there's two things that are going to happen. You're either going to have to decide that it is worth the time to shop and chop and cut and cook to make it, or whether it's not that much different from a prefabricated item. And it goes back to your lifestyle. If you're healthy and you are active and fit and you can process the calories, you'd probably want to cheat a little while, you know, sometimes here and there. If you're someone who is on a restricted diet because of certain health conditions, then it's either going to be make that change, spend a little more time and care shopping, cooking yourself, or you're basically going to have your death sentence and that's it.
Yeah.
There's got to be a motivational factor. And for most people, it's the fear of trying something new. And if we can just break that fear and just have them try it once, they'll probably see that, yes, this product is light years different than another product.
So what do people act like when they come into your classes?
Most people are actually very receptive because they want to learn. They want to learn new techniques, taste new flavor items. Food service industry is always changing. It's always going into new trends. And the only way to stay ahead of the game or to be one step ahead of all the other chefs is to be the first one to find a product or to use that product. So what the chefs have been doing now is instead of waiting for farmers to grow things and finding a new thing, the chefs are working with the farmers to say, hey, I'm looking for a product that has this, this, and this qualities. Can you research and grow it for me? And let's work together. Because if the farmers don't know what to grow, they all grow the same thing. If everyone grows long eggplant on this island, the price drops because of the huge supply. But then they're all going out of business because they can't make their money. It's on their farms. So the farmers want to work with the chefs because if the farmers are growing specifically for the chefs or the restaurants, they know that 100% of their product will be sold to the chefs and restaurants. They don't have to wait for the public to see if they'll buy it or not. So there's been this collaboration in modern times with chefs working directly with the farmers so that the chefs will tell the farmers what they want, what size, what quality, what attributes, and the farmers were growing it to those specifications so they know they're going to sell it to that chef. So it's a win-win situation.
And we might get some of that in the market, I guess, because, you know, for how many years was always the same fruits and vegetables? Mm-hmm.
But now we have so many more local farmers who are growing these unique products. The chefs may not be able to take the entire amount that they grow. So now that they send it into the marketplace, those who have gone to the restaurants and say, I had this tomato at Alan Wong's and it was so phenomenal. Can I get it in the market? And, of course, those products that are fresh and that are found in most restaurants are also found either at the farmers markets or the local supermarkets who will carry a local product because some still won't. And that's the problem we have. If more people will shop at the farmers markets or the markets that carry local products, then hopefully the other markets will see that their sales drop. So maybe they'll need to get on the bandwagon and support our local farmers so that every market has local products. But what we want here is we want a product that is at its best quality. And for it to be at its best quality, it should always be ripened on the vine. It should have the attributes of having full flavor and sweetness. And to have flavor and sweetness means moisture. So the farther a product travels, the less moisture it has. So products that are picked at their peak may have a shelf life of only 3 to 5 days.
Yeah.
So because it's such a tight window and because they're delicate and requires a lot of labor, the more labor involved, the higher the price.
I know. We just got to... I know. It makes so much sense. You know,
but
$5 for two tomatoes is hard for people.
Yes. It is hard, but eventually if more are being sold, then more farmers will want to sell that product because it's a high-value product. Then more will grow that product. The price will eventually come down. If it remains at a price point where no one wants to grow it, then it'll always be lack of supply, high demand, high price points.
Wow.
And people just have to be willing to experiment and try, because if they try a product that is so tremendously different in quality and value, they may then want to pay that price for that product.
Where do you think is the best place to shop for local foods?
Your farmers markets, yeah, local farmers markets.
When you taste this, you can't tell me that that's just an average pineapple.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
So you take this versus any store-bought,
wow,
Costa Rican-grown pineapple, and there is no difference. And unless I allow you to taste this so you understand the difference between local and something grown far away, you would have never even blinked an eye thinking that this was so exorbitantly expensive.
Wow.
But if you support the farm and buy more of it now, the price will only drop if they increase production and grow more of it so that they can know that they can sell the product.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's just so, it's pure pineapple flavor. It's almost like a gummy.
No acid, or very little acid, and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be a pleasure to eat. Every single one is of this quality. And that's the difference between something that's local or something that's mainland mass produced. And this is another one. We have another of my friends who's a farmer on the Big Island, and they grow this ka'u orange. And people,
yes, I've been seeing these.
Don't like the ka'u orange because
they think it's ugly.
They think it's ugly, but they don't realize that this variety of orange was chosen because people in Hawaii like sweets and they love juice. So this variety of orange, even though it is a navel,
orange it is,
has extreme amount of juice and flesh.
Oh my gosh.
It may not be the prettiest on the outside, but it is grown for its natural attribute of being very juicy, highly sweet, and flavorful. One of the things we have to do is we have to try and get our local consumers to maybe get out of their box and maybe experiment and be willing to try a little something here and there and maybe expand their horizons and maybe try to see that there is a difference in quality. Not everyone may have the economic background to support it on a regular basis, but at least if they try and realize that there are better quality products out there, if they can afford the better quality, by all means, please support the local economy by buying the better quality. Even though it's maybe higher priced local product, it is worth it. And until we continue, until we get people to understand this concept, we will never have a diversified ag that can support or be sustainable in Hawaii. We're still going to import over 90% of produce and that comes into Hawaii.
And we're going to be stir-frying frozen cauliflower, broccoli, and carrots.
Forever, correct. So, I mean, just saying this, it's a hard preach, but then once you actually try the product and you see the difference, you can understand, okay, wow.
I mean, maybe could we also eat less to be able to afford this?
Well, see, people, you know, it'll go back to culinary education where if we learn more about nutrition and focus more in on portion size, rather than just eating until we're so full that we pass out, but appreciating good quality food, then maybe we'll have a turn, because when the Pacific Hawaii regional cuisine hit its peak, still 80% of our restaurant patrons were looking for volume and low price versus high quality items. Because everyone perceives a high cost fine dining meal to be a meal that is very expensive, but then they're going to have to go to Zippy's or McDonald's after to fill them up, and that's not necessarily true. So we have to find a way to get people to try, to experiment, and to also learn that a proper meal is not one that is what people think it is.
Eat till you sleep.
Eat till you sleep, correct. It's about proper portioning and nutrition. You know, just like we raise puppies, if you continue to feed a puppy, it's going to eat until it dies because it doesn't know when to stop. But we humans as well have to be able to have a diet that we can control the consumption. We don't need all these calories to survive. People can survive on a minimal amount of calories, but again, it's something that it's cultural. So we have to start breaking cultural stereotypes, or we have to stop breaking this slide into this health condition status where we are now. It's not just us. It's the It's the entire United States.